Choir. I mean, thank you. Thank you, Brass Ensemble. I realize how much time and effort goes in for their practicing and Angela's organizational skills. You don't thank them enough. You don't thank them enough. They're pretty dedicated. Our scripture this morning is from John chapter 5, verses 1 through 9. It's a story you all know well, and you listen as I read aloud. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for the feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the sheep gate, a pool which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to be well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. May God bless the reading of his word. Do you enjoy your pain? Friday, several months ago, I was invited to play in a member guest tournament here in town. And I was the guest. And I had no idea it was going to be 40 degrees and a 35-mile-an-hour wind. If I had been the host, I would have told the guest, "Don't even show up." Now, I did take my golf cart cover. And we had that little Mr. Heater in it that kind of fired us inside. And a lot of folks at that golf course didn't like us doing that. They were jealous of us. They said some things to us. I ain't found it in the Bible anywhere, but I don't think it was good. But I told them to eat their heart out. We were going to try to stay warm. But even in spite of that, it was brutal. Sane people don't do things like that. But there was about 100 of us that did. Do you enjoy your pain? It's a familiar story. It is a story that is the warp and woof of our culture. And as I was preparing to preach, I was going to focus on maybe the title, "Do You Want to Be Healed?" We think everybody does. But some of us have learned to live with our infirmities, and we rather like the privileges that come with our infirmities. Then I thought about all the people who won't be healed, haven't been healed. I'm very conscious of the fact that there are people in this church who are struggling with all kinds of problems: cancer, physical infirmities that won't allow them to walk, emotional problems, family issues. As they struggle with these issues, they want to be healed. They'll do everything they can to be healed. But the healing doesn't come. So as not to hurt those people, I've decided to preach two sermons. Emily Dickerson said, "Heaven is what I cannot reach. The things we want most dangles out in front of us, out of our reach." Well, you recall the scene. Jesus comes to the pool at Bethesda, fed by the streams that come out of the mountains. Occasionally, there would be a melting of the ice from Mount Hermon and other areas that fed this pool. And the water would rush down through the underground channels. And when it did, it would bubble up. It was said that an angel troubled the waters, and all the people who needed to be healed would gather around that pool. And the legend was, when the waters bubbled, the first one who got in would be healed. Now, in that process, you can imagine a lot of people gathered around that pool. It was the Mayo Clinic of Jerusalem. The people would gather there, the lame, the blind, the infirm, those with leprosy, those with diseases that medicine could not heal. It was a scene that reminded me from the movie Cocoon that older of us will remember, where all the old people heard if they could get in the pool at the retirement center, they would become young. I'd like to find that pool, and I bet there'd be a bunch going with me. Now, as this occurred, Jesus appeared at the portico. Can you imagine being at the pool of Bethesda with a lot of kids running around? You can just imagine what was going to happen. Some little snotty kid would probably hide behind the wall and take a brick and throw over the wall and hit that water and just laughing as everybody was jumping in. Can you just imagine the agony of that call? Whose kid is that? Then Jesus looks over and sees a man who's been there for 38 years. 38 years. Can you imagine how many times he tried to get over to the edge of the pool? 38 years. He was a lonely man because he didn't have anyone to put him in the water. It was kind of pitiful. He didn't have any place to go. He didn't have anything to do. All he did was sit there on that worn out pallet. He would hear the water ripple. He would try to get his legs up and get in the pool, but it was too late. And Jesus sees him and asks him, "How long have you been here?" And he answered, 38 years. Now, there is a scene in the movie Gone with the Wind, and it comes right after the intermission. At the railroad station in downtown Atlanta, the trains have been coming in from all over the South, bringing in the wounded for help. And at first, the camera is on one or two of the wounded, but then the camera starts backing up. You probably remember this. And as it backs up, as far as you can see on the screen, are soldiers wounded and bleeding, arms and legs blown off, not getting any help whatsoever. That was the scene at the Pool of Bethesda. All of the agony of Jerusalem had come, and Jesus walks over to one man and said, "Do you want to be healed?" And the man replied, "Well, I don't have a way to get in the water." And Jesus said, "Then get up. Get up and walk." This man had learned to be an invalid. This man had the mind of an invalid. He had learned to live without legs. And then all of a sudden, someone said to him, "Get up and walk." Now, it takes a lot of faith. You got to put yourself in his shoes. It takes a lot of faith to take those skinny, spiny little legs that have not been used in over 38 years, stretch them out and stand up. But he stretched out his legs and they worked. Now, we have two snapshots of life here. One is a snapshot of all those people who get the miracle. What they long for comes true. They're all around us. They get the best jobs. They have the best incomes. They have the best positions. They've won the place of honor. They have perfect children. They have a perfect marriage. Everything about them has fallen into place. When they look in the mirror, they know they have won the gene lottery. They know they have. They have perfect children when you go to the shopping center. They have perfect hair, perfect clothes, perfect stocks and bonds. Their cars never wear out. Their tires never go flat. Their roofs never leak. Their beauty never fades. They are just perfect. And most of the time you see them on TV at evangelistic rallies. They've won the lottery of life. Perfect, perfect, perfect. They are perfect. But there's another snapshot of those, and they don't get anything. You thought about the other 150, 250 people around that portico? I couldn't get away from that as I was working on this. What about the rest of us who sit on the porch of Bethesda? What about the rest of us with our diseases, our depressions, our receding hairlines? What about the rest of us who sit there on the porch of Bethesda, who go through life and we're begging to be healed, and nobody walks up to us and says, "You may be healed"? There isn't a happy soul sitting on the porch of Bethesda. They see the man who's been there 38 years, and they probably say, "Well, we're glad he got healed. That's one less person to jump in ahead of me." So part of this summer is dedicated to those of us who sit on the port of Bethesda. And there's a lot of us. All are loved. Everyone has a mission. You don't have to be healed. You don't have to be healed to have a place in life and be in the economy of God. You see, it's tough making sense of the porch of Bethesda. Thornton Wilder wrote a play, an adaptation of this story for Broadway. He introduces another character called the physician. In Wilder's play, the physician gets there as the angel arrives. The physician says, "Heal me. I've waited a long time to be healed. Heal me that I can continue my good work as a physician." And the angel's reply to the physician was, "Draw back, physician, because this moment is not for you. Without your wound, where would your power be? It is in your very remorse that makes your low voice tremble into the hearts of man. The very angels themselves cannot persuade the wretched and blundering children on earth as one human being broken on the wheel of living. In love service, only the wounded soldier serves. Draw back, physician, draw back." Now, let me interpret that. The angel says to the doctor, "You need to be a wounded healer. Only in our wounds do we speak deeply to all the wounded people around us." Maybe here's another illustration. Do you like to get advice from perfect people? Well, I don't. I've had a lot of them over the years tell me how I ought to do things. How I ought to dress, which side of my head I ought to part my hair on. I solved that problem. I just comb it straight back now. What tie I should wear. My response is, if you know everything so well, what kept a lazy person like you from getting involved in it, you know? Point being, by his wounds we are healed. By our wounds they are healed. Those left on the porch have not been deserted by God, but they have a mission also. There's something for all of us. The physician was disappointed. He knew what he wanted. He wanted to be released from his pain. He wanted to be happy and carefree. Instead, he was told he had to sit on Bethesda's porch. He didn't want to be a better person. He wanted to be a person who was healed. But he found that without the wounded heart, he couldn't be a physician. In fact, he was worth infinitely more to the world with his pain than he was without it. I want to say to you that God does not cause this pain. We live in a world where there is pain, and all of us are susceptible to it. Now, there's a powerful beauty that's born in those terrible corners on Bethesda's porch. In Romans 8:28, Paul speaks that verse that we all know so well. All things work together for good to those who love the Lord and who are called according to his purpose. Paul's not saying that all things are sent from God or that all things laid on us are from God. What he's saying in this verse is that God is at work to bring good out of every event, out of every circumstance of life. So as we sit on Bethesda's porch, God is involved in our wounds. If we let him, he will bring the good out of every possibility, out of every pain, out of every sorrow. The problem is, we don't want that. We're modern Christians. We just want to be rid of the pain. We're like rats caught in a trap. We'll give up the cheese, just let me out of here. Leslie Weatherhead, a British preacher that was popular in the 1950s and 60s, wrote a book that I read in seminary entitled The Key Next Door. And the dominant story from which the book was written comes from a time when Dr. Weatherhead wanted to buy a cottage in the country. He drove out one afternoon to this cottage to see it, and the front door was locked. He peered through the windows. He couldn't see very much. Then he noticed a sign that he hadn't seen before next to the door saying, "If you want to go inside, the key is next door." Next door was down a country path about a mile. To get into the house, he had to go down that path, get the key, then he had to come back. Weatherhead said, I went down that path to the house next door. I got the key. I came back and went inside. I liked what I saw. I bought the cottage. We don't understand the issues we're facing. It could be any number of issues. Life is difficult, hard to understand sometimes. We don't understand why some are taken off the porch and the rest of us are left there. I would not be wise enough to try to give you the answer. But remember that we're not obligated to understand everything. Many of you who've come into the Christian faith or into church life after you've experienced an exciting adolescence or college life, all of a sudden you're bewildered by all of this. You can't seem to put it together. Somewhere you picked up the idea that the key is to understand everything. The key to the Christian faith is not to understand every little bit of it. We teach as much of it as we can. We encourage you to be here so that we can teach you. But there's a mystery within the faith that none of us understands. The longer I preach and the more I lead a church, the more I'm convinced that the mystery is more powerful than we'll ever understand. So the key is not understanding. If you understood why you was on the porch, it wouldn't help any. You'd still be there, wouldn't you? If you understood every mystery in your life, you'd still be on the porch. Life is not a riddle to be solved. It is not a puzzle to be unraveled. Life is a mystery to be lived. To get in the cottage, many of us are going to have to go down that path, go down that road to get the key and come back. Bethesda's porch is also a waiting room. We see others skipping off, but we wait there for things to get better. That waiting room is painful in and of itself. Many wait on Bethesda's porch for health to return. We wait there for the pain to go away, for the chemo to finally kick in, for the, you know, the kill the cancer. Many wait on Bethesda's porch for a better job, for family problems to be resolved, for investments to mature, for marriages to get happier. Many wait on the porch for our depression to end, for our grief to cease, for controversy to end. Heck, we may be on Bethesda's porch right now. Some wait on the porch, like my mother and daddy did, for the prodigal to come home. And while we wait on Bethesda's porch, our pain becomes a very healing experience for all those around us. What about those who've won the lottery? Everybody got excited about somebody up in Maine who won the lottery. I feel sorry for whoever won it. They don't know really what's in store for them. What about those who were given the opportunity to get up? What about those who won the lottery? Those who were given the opportunity to get up and take up the beds and walk? Some of you are in the congregation today. Remember I said on both sides of the ledger? That's the most perplexing thing I see as a minister. If you follow the analogy, I see people who've won the lottery. They have a chance to get their life straightened out. Their jobs get better. They hear the gospel message. They have a chance to be rid of the burden of sin. They hear the words, get up. Do you want to be healed? And do you know what I see as a pastor? Well, I don't know if I really want to. I kind of like it where I'm at. Can you imagine going through a cancer ward of any hospital, of any city in this state, and saying, do you want to be healed? And those people putting up an argument with you? About 10 years ago, my wife and I went down to Jamaica. Remember that? I bought me a red Baywatch lifeguard bathing suit. She told me, she said, don't put that thing on. She said, the tide won't come in. You better get rid of it right now. But we went down to Jamaica, and we had a great time. We enjoyed ourselves. It was really a lot of fun. And so we got ready to leave to come home. So we loaded up all of our luggage in the Cumbie, and they drove us back to the airport there in Kingston. And the line to go through customs would have gone out that door across the street and down to the fire station, but it was moving. And as we were standing in line, I noticed that Sarah was turning sort of ghostly white. And she had gotten overheated, and so I grabbed her and I kind of pulled her over. And there wasn't any chairs, and I just sat her down next to a concrete column. And there was a nurse in the line, and she jumped out of the line to help us. And an attendant came over with a wet, cold washcloth and put it on Sarah's forehead. And then somebody brought us a wheelchair, and they told me to wheel her right up to the front of the line. And they took us right on through customs, took us down to our gate where the plane was, and Delta took us and put us right on the plane, upgraded us to first class. I mean, they really took care of us. I mean, it was really nice. We flew back to Atlanta, and we got there, and when we were the first ones off, there was a wheelchair there for her again, and so I took her right up the ramp, and we got to the gate, and there was a lady with a little four-wheel buggy, and she drove us down to the luggage area, and they got our luggage and had us a cab, put us in the cab, and the guy drove us out to our car, and I got out. When we got out, I was going to pay him or tip him or something. He said, no, sir. So Delta Airlines paid for this. We hope y'all had a good time and hope you'll fly with us again. So we got in the car and we put on our seat belts, and I turned to Sarah and I said, Sarah, whatever you do, don't you ever get well again. Do not get well. I want you to stay in this condition. If somebody had come by and wanted to heal her, I wouldn't have let them do it. I don't know if she had, but I enjoyed that privilege. You know, you can learn to live with a broken leg so long as you can manipulate your life around it. There's some people who've learned to live without the church. They know their emptiness, but they like the privileges. We learn to live with our inadequacies. And then somebody gives us a chance to get well and we don't take it. We've learned to live with bad families. You don't have the courage to get well. You've learned to live with a bad attitude. You don't have the courage to deal with your anger. I mean, anger is a chosen attitude. Nobody does it to you. You've learned to live with harshness and coldness. And when somebody says to you, do you want to be well? Your response is, well, I don't know. All you do is complain and squeeze your life. The big challenge is for those of us who have a chance to get up and walk and won't do it. That's the big challenge. There are two types of people who are there at the pool of Bethesda. There are those who are lucky. Jesus says, come on, do you want to be healed? Let's do something about it. The man could have said, no, I've learned to live here, and I don't want to learn to live anywhere else. And the first thing that happened to him, if you go ahead and read a few more verses down, he got in trouble with the religious leaders because Jesus healed him on the Sabbath. He'd have been some ways better off to stay by the pool. Both groups have to make a decision to accept the healing or to accept the mission. Not to decide is to decide. Life is a mystery. We don't understand it. We want to argue about it. We want to comprehend it. Just accept the mystery and take the points of life that are given. Do you want to take up your bed and walk? Do you? You can. Or you can stay by the pool at Bethesda. Do you choose to use your wounds to heal the people around you? That's your choice. Either way, trust me, God is there. He has not abandoned us. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, your word says where two or three are gathered, you two are in our midst. We didn't see you come in this morning, but we know you're here. And we may not see you leave, but we feel your presence. And this morning, Lord, I pray that somehow, some way, that we'll gather an application of truth from this and take up our pallets and stand up and walk and accept the miracle that comes. And if not, live with our wounds and still be a force for you in the world in which we live that has so much pain. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen.